The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
Here we go. It is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. I'm Dave Congleton, back from vacation. Good to be with you. That's pretty much my vacation time. I'm going to be with you now for a while. Hope. In about an hour, author Katia Sengel shares with us her memoir, Straight Jackets and Lunch Money. Very compelling story. This hour, as you know, I have spent the last 2 weeks in Europe. And I can tell you the number one story in the news every day was what is going on with Israel and what is going on with Iran. Here's the Associated Press. Iran's president has warned that the tiniest invasion by Israel would bring a massive and harsh response as the region braces for potential Israeli retaliation after Iran's attack over the weekend. There is so much to talk about here. Always pleased to have Professor James Armstead join us, as he does now. Professor, good afternoon.
Hi, Dave. My pleasure to be with you, sir.
And particularly good to hear you in such strong voice.
I could probably talk all the way to the Netherlands if you were still there.
All right. That's fair enough. So let's bring people up to speed, please. And let's just do a little basic background. Why did Iran attack Israel? And to what extent was there damage done?
Recently, Israel took out seven senior military officials at the embassy in Lebanon, at the Iranian embassy. These were people who'd been involved in working with Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis, and were identified as principal agents in the proxy war going on between the 3H organizations and Israel. So this was a response by Iran from that.
And
now, this is something new. We have an escalation here. This is the first time in the 40 years of struggle between an Iran and Israel that there's been a direct attack from Iranian soil on Israeli soil. So that's something new, these 300 projectiles being launched.
But what I've been reading is that most of the projectiles had zero impact.
Well, there's a couple of things we need to look at here. Let's divide the projectiles into three.
Okay.
They're cruise missiles and ballistic missiles that were targeted at Israeli targets. The drones, 171 of them, targeted as Israel. And missiles, drones, and projectiles that were not specifically targeted. They were ballistic. So they're not going anywhere. The Iron Dome defense system is absolutely fantastic. It consists of three parts. There is a radar guidance and directional integrated system that picks up the missiles. It picks them up shortly after launch. They're directed toward you, and it actually determines where the projectile is going. If it's going to strike at something important, you then pass this over to your combat information system, and you identify the weapon in which you want to respond to this. If it's not going anywhere that you're worried about, it's going to fall in the desert, it's going to fall away from populated areas, away from a military installation, you let it go. It's not going to do anything. That way you don't spend $250,000 shooting at it, and it's not going to do any damage. And, of course, thirdly, there are those missiles, projectiles, drones that are going after something you want to defend. You determine that that is valuable to you as a civic, social entity, population center, a hospital, what have you, or a military facility, and you shoot it down.
Let's circle back, though. With the original attack by Israel, how was that received in the world community?
Well, the world community was worried. In the past, we have considered embassies as the actual territory of the sending state. So the United States Embassy in London is U.S. territory.
Right.
If you're there, you are in the United States. So this is Iranian territory that's inside of Lebanon. However, like the protected symbols, for example, the Red Cross, if you use a Red Cross symbol over a building that you're using to store your ammunition, you then lose the international law protection of that symbol. So it can be, the building can be attacked because the symbol's misused, and you've lost the protection that is granted thereby. So if your embassy is being used to conduct a military operation, you've got these seven individuals who are conducting the proxy war against Israel. The Israelis viewed that as an act of war by those individuals, and the protected status of the embassy being lost temporarily while these individuals are operating. Not everybody agrees with that. That's the Israeli interpretation. It is a reasonable interpretation of international law. But there's certainly objection to that.
I'll pull this text in now on the Stolberg line. Listener wants to know if you can comment on how much damage the Israelis did to the Iranian embassy in Syria. Was it completely destroyed?
It was not completely destroyed. A portion of the building, from the pictures, my estimate, I'm not an engineer, I'd say 20% of the building or thereabouts was destroyed. This was a precision-guided munition. It went after the specific area where these individuals were operating, and it did eliminate them.
All right, so the world is watching, because everyone's trying to figure out how Israel is going to respond. Kind of put us in the Israeli mindset, Professor. What are their choices? What are the expectations for a response?
Let me back up a little bit to answer that.
Sure.
And we've got two previous incidents very similar to this. Ronald Reagan asked the Israelis not to go after the Syrian nuclear facilities. He did not want escalation. We were looking to avoid war in the Middle East, and he implored the Israelis not to do that. The Israelis attacked and destroyed the Syrian nuclear installation. George Bush asked the Israelis not to go after the Iranian nuclear facilities. The Israelis did that. One of the things that we have to consider strategically when you have an ally, allies are not going to have all of the same restrictions, all of the same concerns, all of the same weaknesses that you have. You're not the same. You have similar concerns. That's why you're allies. If you ask an ally publicly to do something it doesn't think it's possible not to do, you've created a faux pas. You have gone public with a statement that puts space between you and the ally. The Israeli point of view, looking at the development of nuclear facilities, particularly if they think a bomb is very close, it's in the offing, it's something they'd have to deal with, a nuclear weapon, given the size of Israel, the proximity to these nations in the neighborhood, they are going to respond to that. So making that kind of request publicly is probably not in our best interest strategically. In both cases, as I said, Israel went ahead with the attack. So publicly now asking the Israelis not to respond at all would probably not be a good idea. That's probably not where you want to start the discussions. Now, privately, of course, you may have a very different focus, a very different point of view. You may offer some things to put them in abeyance concerning a potential threat. But asking them to do something that politically the people at the top, the prime minister, if he were to restrain himself, would he be out of office? You know, one has to ask that question before you start the discussion, going to the IDF chief of staff and either the Israeli government asking down or as allies requesting our allies not to do something from a tactical point of view could be a very serious mistake.
Well,
I think the Israelis think they have to respond to this attack.
And before the break, one article I was reading when I was overseas was an analyst was suggesting that, well, here, I went on vacation 2 weeks ago. Israel was a center of a lot of international criticism. And now that's totally flipped. And this analyst was saying that Israel got this unbelievable lifeline thrown to them because of the Iranian attack.
Absolutely. Comment. Absolutely. They were losing. They were losing the international support, if you will, to bring this down to the street level. They were losing their underdog status. They've got that again. They're the nation being picked on. They're the nation responding to more than 300 projectiles being fired at them in this massive attack.
All right.
And, of course, they came out technically very well because they dealt with the attack, in addition to the allies supporting. Almost half of the projectiles coming in over Israeli airspace were destroyed by allies, the U.S., France, Great Britain. And Saudi Arabia destroyed air incursions into their airspace.
I think that's an important point to emphasize, Professor, that the United States played a major role in helping Israel.
In the air and at sea, yes, indeed.
All right. We'll follow up on all this. Your phone call still to come. Dr. Armstead is back with us, explaining to us what is happening and whether or not we can avoid escalation in the Middle East. I'm Dave Congleton. This is KVEC. That would be me. And our guest continues to be Professor James Armstead, regular contributor to this broadcast, picking his brain about the unfolding situation between Israel and Iran, and of course, the United States. And Professor, as we continue with you, as you suggested in the first segment, President Biden is apparently urging Israel to either go slow or don't respond at all.
Well, our point of view, our perspective in this crisis from the beginning, starting back in October, when that terrible attack occurred in Israel, is that we did not want this local situation, this attack from Gaza, the response into Gaza, we did not want that to escalate into a general war in that area. We did not want a regional Middle Eastern war. It was clear that Hamas was receiving support and aid, if not direction. That was not indicated in the intelligence that we saw. But there's a strong connection between Hamas, between Iran. We look upon Hamas as a client entity of the Iranians. We did not want escalation. Indications from the Iranians is that they did not want an escalation. We sent overwhelming force into the area. We put an amphibious ready group of Marines and the supporting ship, and we had two aircraft carrier groups, the fast attack carrier groups, in the area, in the region, and they were flying sorties. They were covering the area. It made it clear that we thought it was serious, and I think that held a lot of potential action back. But clearly, then, as now, this developing it into a much more serious event is on everyone's mind.
So then look at the perspective of Netanyahu. What's the pressure that he's under?
Well, in the very beginning, I think and he hasn't consulted with me, but I think Mr. Netanyahu certainly thought having overwhelming American force in the area backed up Israel. So he was free to go into Gaza, not necessarily being prompted by us, but he was free to go into Gaza, do what he wanted to do in terms of identifying the terrorist attack, destroying the centers of Hamas command and control, and getting the hostages. I unfortunately think getting the hostages was not his primary objective. Yeah. That's not where he went first. He went after destroying Hamas, and hence you'd get the hostages because they were not able to have command and control and keep them there. I think that's the way he looked at the situation. I think that was a mistake, by the way. But that's what he did because he had that overwhelming American force backing him up. He didn't have to worry about the Hezbollah coming in his rear from Lebanon attacking, and he was able to spend the first 2 or 3 months pretty much with a free hand to operate, even though we were trying to quell some of his more vigorous operations.
So sketch this out for us. What are possible ways that Israel might respond to Iran?
Well, if I were making suggestions, if I were asked by the Israeli strategic planners, first, I want them to change the way they are thinking. They are dealing with Hamas directly, Hezbollah indirectly, becoming more direct, and the Houthis. They're dealing with those as well. These are three arcs of attack that are coming at them, at us, and at the world in that area. They are threatening the Red Sea, the Gulf, and the Suez Canal, and the Med. They are threatening with force, and it's something that has to be dealt with a coordinated, integrated strategic view. That is not the tactics of Gaza. We're getting attacks from Hamas in Gaza today. Let's respond to that. We're getting attacks from Hezbollah. They're launching drones. Let's respond to that. We're getting attacks and threats distantly, and a ship being seized in the area of the Red Sea. So the Iranians and the Houthis working together doing that. Let's respond to those and do all of those sort of like a doctor dealing with symptoms. Let's address the disease. The disease is Iran. We have to put pressure on Iran. It has to be clear that we understand they are backing these other elements. They are part and parcel of what's going on in the region in a coordinated fashion. We have to respond. Now, a robust military response is absolutely critical to dealing with the tactical situation. That's fine. Let's do that. Let's get that done. The Israelis are pretty good at that. They're pretty darn good at that. Dealing with the strategic situation now, you need the Jordanians, you need the Egyptians, you need the Saudis backing you. You need a strong front. The Sunni Islamic states are under direct and indirect attack by Iran. It needs to be understood by the Israelis that you've got these allies because they have the same enemy. What do the Spanish say? The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
You need to strengthen those relationships. We were very close before October 7th to coming to some sort of regularization of the relationship between the Israelis and the Saudis. We were close to that. One might argue strategically that clearly Hamas and the Iranians did not want that relationship to get stronger. They did not want the economic power, the geographic position, the political and military power of the Saudis coming to the aid of the Israelis. They didn't want that. So what do you do? You find a way to separate them. How do you put some space in between them? Well, if we have Hamas attacking the Israelis with 1,400 people, more than 1,400 people being killed, with nearly 200 being captured, you've got that provokes an Israeli response. That's automatic. You know that's coming. If that happens, popular opinion at home for the Saudis becomes very supportive of the folks in Gaza, the Palestinians in Gaza, who are being attacked by the Israelis, who have this overwhelming military force coming through their country, these poor benighted folks, then have the sympathy of the man in the street in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi government, even though it is an absolutist monarchy, they back off. They pull out of those negotiations. They suspend them indefinitely because they're concerned about their own survival.
Yeah, but just to clarify before the news break here, you fully expect Israel to respond.
I do indeed. I do indeed.
I have some
ideas about how they might respond to do what needs to be done.
Right, but I got 30 seconds here. I want to hold that off.
Yes, sir.
But even if President Biden is urging caution and slowing down, you fully expect Israel to do what they think is best.
I do. I expect some response. They're going to do what they think they need to do. Remember, this is not a strategic game with them. This is about survival.
All right. We're in the conversation with Professor Armstead, breaking down the situation in the Middle East and what the consequences are and what our involvement should be. We've got news, traffic, weather. We'll invite your thoughts. Keep the conversation going. All part of today's edition of the Dave Congleton Show. Stay with us. We are looking at the situation unfolding by the day, by the hour in the Middle East. We get perspective from Dr. Armstead. The world is holding its breath, trying to figure out what Israel is going to do next. On the Stolberg line, a question for the professor from Susan. Susan checks in. Hey, Susan. Will Netanyahu be voted out of office soon? What effect would that have on the war? What do you say to that, Professor?
Well, great question. There's a lot of political consternation going on in Israel. Netanyahu, we don't talk about it now because so much has happened in the last 5 months. But, of course, there are criminal charges that are up against him that he's dealing with. He had a thwarted initiative to change the relationship between Supreme Court appointments in Israel and the Knesset, essentially making the Supreme Court subservient to the Knesset and the sitting prime minister. That has been thwarted. There were demonstrations, public demonstrations against that, and a great deal of argument going on in the Knesset about that initiative. He's also been forced to create what we would call a national unity government. That is, the current cabinet is not the cabinet that he initially put in upon his re-election, but he's got a number of people from the left and the center left that are in, including Benny Gantz, his defense minister, who was the left candidate against him in the previous election. So is that a possibility? Absolutely. I think his political career is ended no matter what. Win, lose, or draw with the current situation. As soon as we're beyond the crisis, I think there's going to be a vote of no confidence, and which will force an early election that he will probably lose.
All right, we have some calls coming in for the professor, 805-543-8830. Or 800-549-5832. We'll start with Alan in San Luis. Hey, Alan.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Doctor.
Hey.
I wanted to check on the accuracy of something I heard, that the Biden administration has reached out to the Ukraine, asking them not to attack at this point the Russian oil facilities.
I have no knowledge of that. I have not heard that or even rumors to that effect, but I'm unaware if that's correct.
The claim was that it would be in timing with the election and oil prices.
It would make some sense. It would certainly make some sense, but I have no information that can confirm or deny.
That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
All right, Alan, thank you. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. Here is Leon on KVEC. Hi, Leon.
Guys.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, you're on the air. How are you today?
I'm good. I have a question for Professor Armstead.
Sure.
First of all, in this first segment, the professor explained to us how embassies are considered to be part of a country that's owned
sovereign territory.
Yeah. And then you gave these qualifications as to other circumstances when an embassy can be attacked or may be attacked. You said that, in fact, apparently Israel decided that there were in the embassy several people who were key in helping to support the Hezbollah or whatever other kinds of units are there working against Israel.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, if that's the case, and you now, notwithstanding the fact that that land that the embassy is considered to be Iranian turf, Israel attacked it anyway. And my understanding is, prior to that attack, Israel has continued to tell us, and this is why I feel frustrated, because I'm a and I've always been in support of the United States' efforts to help and support Israel. But I'm beginning to wonder, Professor Armstead, whether we've gotten to the point where when Israel offers the flimsiest excuse to do anything, and we turn around and say, for example, I think President Biden went to Israel right after the attack in October. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. But I think three days later. Within three days, he was there.
And I felt at the time he went for one reason. He already knew that Netanyahu could go over the top and overdo it. I think he went there specifically to caution him because what was said in the media was he asked Netanyahu to stay within international law.
Right.
So what happens? Okay, he came back, and that administration has been cautioning him, you know, be careful, do this, do that. Netanyahu was basically said, oh, yeah, and then he does what in the hell he wants to do. Now, with respect to that horrible attack itself, there were 1,400 people killed, massacred, kidnapped, whatever, in the attack. And then there were prisoners taken, or hostages. At this point, my last hearing of a number is there have now been over 38,000 people killed, Palestinians, half of whom are children under the age of 18. And the world sat here, and you earlier said that you thought that this attack by Iran on Israel has kind of redeemed them and renewed their support in the world. I don't agree. I don't think that renews it, because why would the fact that I think a child was hurt in that attack, because the missiles and the drones were all basically shot down without any great damage to Israel.
All right, let's hear from the professor. Hang on a second, Leon. What do you say, professor?
Well, there's a lot there.
Yep.
Mr. Bordelon, by the way, is I've known for quite some time. He's been criticizing me for many years.
All right.
But that notwithstanding, the trip by the president right after the war started, I think his assessment is correct. I think we were worried about an escalation. We weren't sure where Mr. Netanyahu was going to go. Certainly, his history is for an immediate, violent, deep response, and he was beginning to talk about Palestinians as being inhuman, being beast. There was some language there that was certainly worrisome from the point of view of a supporting state, the United States, not wanting a general war to result. And I think the president went there to do that, as Mr. Bordelon says. I would agree that's why he went. It didn't seem to work as well as the president would like.
Mm.
Put some space between us. Certainly put some space between us. The casualties in the war, which are significant, I'm not sure about those numbers, 38,000. I've seen that kind of number up as high as 40, 41,000 unofficially. I think the total, it's still terrible. It's more like around 30. 28 to 30 is the official, I think, the better numbers that we've got. But that's still significant. That kind of civilian loss in this sort of operation is unacceptable.
All right, Leon.
I think we recognize that. As the world. So I would agree with
Leon.
With that.
Leon, what else do you want to say?
Here's what I'm going to say. First of all, I'm right on the numbers. The numbers are in the upper 30s or perhaps even 40. I've not heard 40 yet. Secondly, Netanyahu, look at how this looks. First of all, he told those people in the northern part of Gaza, go to the south. Then they went to the south. They were pushed up against the Egyptian border. The Egyptians did not want them to come into their country and stood firm and made it clear they didn't. Then he announces that he's going to go into the area where he told these people to go. I guess what I'm saying is this. As an American, I have always thought that we should support Israel. But we've not had, until Netanyahu, a prime minister who was as reckless, and he treats us like he's the boss, and he uses our resources to be a bully.
All right. Let me jump in. There's a lot here to unpack. Leon, good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. I'm going to ask Professor Armstead to respond.
I think in great measure what Mr. Bordelon says is correct. That we have been in an alliance is as strong as its weakest link. That's an old axiom. I think that's true. I think we have an ally with a leader that is out they're at the leading edge, and perhaps sometimes over the leading edge, in his responses. Certainly the response that Israel makes under Mr. Netanyahu has not taken into account significantly our point of view, and not just our point of view, the rest of our allies, the French, the British, who were with us. Mr. Sunat was visiting Israel in the last few days. The French have made some significant contributions, as well as the British, in addition to our maritime forces in the area. We haven't had the kind of give and take, the kind of strategic balance with our Israeli allies that I think we should have. It's not the perfect relationship. No ally relationship is ever perfect. Churchill is famously known for saying, "We all have our crosses to bear in mind as the cross of Lorraine," describing his difficult relationship with de Gaulle during the war. Where are we going to go with this? What does it mean? I think we are solidly behind Israel. I think we need to continue pressure on Israel to follow the precepts of international law. We, as I mentioned earlier, we need to get the Israelis to take a more strategic view of their actions and not just the tactical responses. But we're in this with them.
All right.
We need to change their behavior.
805
is what I would say.
543-8830, 800-549-5832. For Professor Armstead, as we talk about the Israeli-Iranian and the U.S. situation, Ron checks in on KVEC. Hey, Ron.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, Ron.
The thing that really bothers me is the United States' position. They've taken a position through this administration, and I wouldn't care whether it's Republican or Democrat. It's this administration, where it's just showing a huge sign of weakness. You know, the president and the head of the Defense Department, whoever, whatever his name is, and the fellow in the State Department, they kept saying, "Don't," to Israel, "Don't." And so Israel's, not to Israel, to Iran. And Iran answers back, basically, "I don't give a damn what the United States says. We're going to do what we're going to do." So they send 300 missiles and all the other stuff over there. And, you know, President Biden apparently has said to Israel, "Well, take the win." And Israel is sitting there thinking, "You really think this is a win, what these people are doing, that they're going to come back with a dirty nuclear bomb? They're going to do this, they're going to do that, nerve gas and everything else." And the only way to stop that is to respond so they realize. Instead of the president saying, "Look, Iran, what you did, you shouldn't have done. And we told you don't. The next time this happens, we're going to bomb the heck out of you." And I trust me, they would not do it. But
right.
No, they think
right.
They have.
Ron, hang on. Ron, you're putting a lot out there. Hang on. Professor, comment, please.
I certainly understand the way Ron feels. I would respond by saying, in the last 48 hours, half of the projectiles that were launched at Israel were stopped by us and the allies. We are there. We are there in strength. I think the Iranians understand why we are there. And not being publicly bellicose is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign that we are paying attention, we are thoughtful, and we're trying to keep this in perspective and keep from going to a much more serious situation.
Ron.
Well, you know, that may be the case. They're not going to send over 300 anymore, like I believe. I mean, they have the capabilities of manufacturing a dirty atomic bomb, especially with the ties they have to Russia. And they're very close where they can get it on Israelis. But they have, I'm sure they have nerve gas. They can do all these other things. And if they believe that other than Israel, they're not going to have much of a response to something like that, based on when the president says, "You take the win, Israel, don't do anything else to Iran." They only understand strength, that is power, whatever. And I'm not saying just go bomb people willy-nilly to show our power. But if you're going to take somebody, keep them from attacking you, you have to put enough defense, offense, whatever it is, in their country to let them realize that they can't do this.
All right, we'll talk about that. Ron, thanks for calling. What do you say, Professor?
in addition to the carrier strike group that that sallied into the area, the Ford, which has come back now, there's another carrier group that's there in addition to other 6th Fleet and 5th Fleet assets in the area. I would point out that a typical carrier has 4 squadrons of airplanes. 3 of those are fighter squadrons. Each of the airplanes aboard, F-18 Strike Eagles, the improved F-18A, and the new F-35, are all nuclear capable. The Iranians know what we have in the area, what we are capable of. There are submarines in the area, ballistic missile submarines that are nuclear capable. So not being publicly bellicose doesn't mean we're weak. We are able, hopefully, to be wise, use our strength wisely, and not get a war started. Right. But the Iranians know that we're there and the kind of strength we have.
All right, here's Joseph on KVEC. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Dave. Hi, hello, Joseph. Professor.
Hi.
My opinion on the subject is Israel has already, to their, what they've done is violate a lot of so-called, you know, laws, international laws, and by bombing their consulate, I think, the Iranian consulate in another country there, they just don't see, I don't think, a lot of right-wing Americans and right-wing people who are pro-Israel are just seeing red right now and just want more war, more killing, and I don't think that's going to solve anything, really. What we need is, like how you're kind of saying, is a little bit more wisdom. And yeah, it's just a mess over there. And I think from the beginning, from this started, Israel needed to not really retaliate, but kind of, you know, put up their defenses if they want. But us as Americans, why do we have to keep giving them money, giving them support when they're violating laws? And Iran strikes and not, you know, they don't even really go into Israel because of our defenses, and it's like everyone's hypocrisy all of a sudden saying, oh, no, Iran, they're so bad.
Let's hear from the professor. Jim?
Well, certainly a 300-missile strike against Israel is illegal.
Yeah, I mean the now that they do that, but after 30,000 dead and innocent in Gaza, it really is. I just think a lot of us need to look morally inside our compass and keep saying, oh, just blindly supporting Israel and America and American support in Israel is morally corrupt. And a lot of these Israeli soldiers and people supporting them, it's just cowardice to kill women and children and call this a war. And even Iran, I mean, they have so much sanctions on them and all this stuff against them, you know, that the Western civilization puts on them, and yet they're still doing their thing, and they strike in defense. It's not they attacked first. Israel attacked with way too much force, I think, after October 7th, and everyone's going to have to pay the repercussions on their lost morality in this so-called war.
Let me jump in here, Joseph. I'm almost out of time. Thank you for calling in. How do you respond to his passion, Jim?
Well, I certainly understand how he feels, and but he's taking, I think, a tactical tit for tat view of what's going on. There's this, there's a response. Well, this response is wrong, or that response is too much. I think we have to remember what started this current round of violence is an attack upon Israel. 1,400 people were killed. I think there were 10 or 15 military and police in that 1,400, more than 1,400. The rest of these were civilians, you know, women being raped, children being murdered. This was a tremendous attack, much more serious than 9/11 was for us. If we look at the numbers, Israel's got 5 million people, they lose 1,400. We have 330 million, we lost 2,500. So it's a much more serious attack from an Israeli point of view. Their border is breached. They had a foreign forces inside their country, and almost 200 hostages were taken. They're going to respond to that. They've got to address that. They've got to defend themselves. Article 51 of the The United Nations Convention gives every nation state the absolute right of self-defense. They were defending themselves.
Let me squeeze in.
Did they go
in
overboard? That's another question.
All right. Let me squeeze.
And I think that's good.
Let me squeeze in Tony. Hey, Tony.
Hey, just real quick. You have to remember, too, this is a religious war as well. So no matter what we think, it's what they think. And if they think that they're right and they think that they're wrong, they're just going to keep duking it out till somebody says, okay, enough's enough. Here comes a nuke.
All right, let's talk about that. Thank you, Tony. I got about a minute for a response to that, Jim.
Well, let me give you, in ascending order, what I think some reasonable responses would be.
I got one
minute. Let's hope we're not going to go nuke.
I got 1 minute.
But, okay, we could have a cyber attack against the Iranians. I don't think the Israelis will do that because that gives away their strength if you need it, if this escalates into something more serious. We could go after the Israelis could go after the Iranian nuclear facilities. I think that's a possibility, either with kinetic energy weapons or with cyber. Commandos could go after the Israeli flagship that was taken last week, which we haven't really talked about. And, of course, a nuclear-capable weapon could be fired by the Israelis from several locations without a nuclear weapon to indicate to the Iranians that if the Israelis wanted to do that, they have the capability.
Yes, but Tony's point was this is a religious war that's just going to go on and on and on and on.
Well, there's some truth to that, but I think this is much more political with religious overtones. Remember, right, the Iranians are also arrayed against Sunni Muslims. They're Shiites.
I got to jump in.
So the Sunni Muslim states are on the other side.
I got to jump in. We'll come back after this. Jim Armstead has 25 seconds, sir.
Only 25.
Go.
Well, our last caller who makes the point that this is a religious war, I think that may be an analysis just on the surfaces. The parties are of different religions. It's not necessarily a war about religion or changing the religion one country to the other. Certainly, we should recognize that Iran, looking at the history, recognized Israel in 1948.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111911.